Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Usual intro goes the way of the dodo because we don't have Vader Club this week. We'll get back to it next week. Life, you know. Rest in peace, Val Kilmer. It's so weird watching.
Good Batman, but a decent guy.
This is where it gets a little weird for me, because I was, you know, I was basically a no money making intern on a studio lot at the height of Val Kilmer's power. And Val Kilmer's, he's a good actor. Don't get me wrong. He's great in certain roles. Don't get me wrong, but his career trajectory, when you look at it, is he has great roles early in his career. And then, with the exception maybe of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and a couple of other things, like he kind of stole MacGruber, if you ever saw that movie. But it's 30 years of dreck. And it's a little bit like Gene Hackman's career, is how I would put it, except that Val Kilmer didn't get the chance to do the prestige, elderly statesman type of roles in his 50s and 60s, going into his 70s and 80s that Gene Hackman got to do. Like, you look at his early career, and like his first few roles are like Top Secret, which is a phenomenal comedy by the Zucker brothers who did Airplane, Real Genius, which still holds up. Have you ever seen Real Genius?
I have not.
Oh, Val Kilmer has phenomenal comedy chops in those two movies. Like, he plays basically, you know, an MIT level, like, wunderkind at a college campus who's basically working on this project for the Department of Defense. It's a fantastic comedy if you haven't seen it. Goes a couple more years, has, you know, Top Gun. Really just steals Tombstone out from everybody in that cast. And that's a Murderer's Row cast right there, but he's great. And then he does Heat in a supporting role with De Niro and Pacino, and then just starts picking crap projects. You know, Batman Forever, which you can't blame him for wanting to do a Batman movie, except that Schumacher and not Tim Burton at this point. You know, The Saint. You know, other movies like that. And it's just it's not going well. But like, I'm on the Universal lot from around 96 to 2000. And you hear stories, and they're all true, and they even come out in the media about, you know, how Val Kilmer is just difficult to work with on set, and he's just an absolute pain in the ass kind of diva, getting in fights with co-stars and things. Like, he got in a fight with Tom Sizemore on the set of Red Sun because Tom Sizemore wanted his elliptical brought in because he was starting to gain some weight as he got older, and Val Kilmer's like, oh, he's getting special treatment. The brother is getting exercise equipment brought in so he doesn't look fat on screen, Val Kilmer. You know, I mean, like, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang's phenomenal. You know, but it's just one of those things where you watch and you listen in death and you don't want to speak ill of the dead. And I never had any personal dealings with Val Kilmer. He seems like a cool guy when he's not at work. Like, if you watch his documentary where he just shot a bunch of stuff on camcorder and stuff, and his son put it together, you know, very cool, spiritual. He's part Native American. He goes really big into that kind of spiritualness and things like that. But for movies, Tombstone, definitely. I just watched that last night. It still slaps. And I watched Real Genius a few weeks ago before his death, and that movie still holds up in the 80s. I need to sit down and watch Top Secret again, but that was pretty much his debut, doing kind of an Elvis-style Cold War comedy from the makers of Airplane. His comic timing is just fantastic. And, I mean, he got to end it well with the Top Gun Maverick, even though he really couldn't speak all that well. It was kind of, like, done with his computer and just his eyes. But any Val Kilmer thoughts in general, or is this just past your... This is more of a Gen X thing. I get that, but...
I mean... My girlfriend and I were chatting about, like, Batman and that sort of thing, and we were talking about George Clooney and Val Kilmer and, like, kind of the mid-90s Batmans or whatever. And you know, Val Kilmer to me is, you know, especially his mid-90s trajectory, he was a guy who's just a little bit of a monster on a set, right? And
right.
That resulted in him by his mid to late 40s really going through that fat drunk period. And he made a I think of, you know, especially when I got more savvy with just being able to find movies and stuff online, you know, I'd run into the aughts era Val Kilmer movies that he would do where he didn't even look like Val Kilmer anymore. It's like, you see Val Kilmer on there and, you know, I think, yeah, he got to a point of parody, and I'm glad that he got out of that towards the end of his life.
Yeah, because he goes from Doc Holliday, where everybody thought he should have had an Oscar nomination, and he didn't. And then he goes and he does the Batman movie. He's a decent Batman, but number one, Keaton knocked it out of the park so heavily, which shocked everybody. And then Schumacher comes in with his terrible scripts. I mean,
that I was trying to explain to Nujibi that Joel Schumacher is a very bad director, and she was like, she's like less keen, like she's just not as into that stuff as like you and I are. But like, I think you and I both have very strong thoughts about the way that guy makes movies.
No, Schumacher is more of a pleasing to the eye thing rather than having any depth to him.
And he's Michael Bay before Michael Bay.
A bit. I'd even say Baz Luhrmann before Baz Luhrmann became Baz Luhrmann for the most part. But yeah, but then he goes from doing the Batman movie to doing the Island of Dr. Moreau, which is an infamously horrific project because the script's bad. Everybody's quit on this movie. Like, Bruce Willis was originally supposed to be in it. Then he quit because he got Demi Moore decided to divorce him, so he couldn't do it. Rob Morrow quit because of script changes, and then Brando comes on, and Brando's daughter commits suicide, and Brando's already a handful to deal with, and then Kilmer goes in, and his wife serves him divorce papers on the set, which just sets him off to being an absolute beast to people the entire time, and the movie stinks, And it's, do you know what the island of Dr. Moreau is? It's
I remember the Lost Island of Dr. Moreau. I have never seen it. Isn't it like kind of a takeoff of like a Twilight Zone episode or whatever, where everyone on the island is freaks?
Yes, because he's doing experiments on animals and trying to merge DNA. Yeah,
right.
Just a garbage movie, too.
Isn't that a Twilight Zone episode originally?
I think so. I didn't watch a lot of the Twilight Zone. That's out of my depth.
Oh, okay, all right. Let me look that up. But yes,
you know, I know the famous episodes of the Twilight Zone. You know, the one with Burgess Meredith, where all the time in the world and the glasses. I know the one about the kid who has his family trapped in his own reality, and if they backtalk to him, he's gonna have them killed or whatever. So everybody's kind of scared of him. You know, those types of things, but I can't quote you Twilight
it's,
Zone.
It's an H. It's actually an H.G. Wells story.
Yes.
That was, yes. There we go. Okay. So not Twilight Zone. It's actually H.G. Wells and adapted and updated. The adapt and update era of the 1990s, right? Like the 1990s, I'm not going to, you know, defend. The 70s, 80s, aughts, or beyond in their update and adapt takes, because there's a lot of stinkers among them. But good Lord, the 1990s brought us like things like this. But I will always hold up the shot-for-shot artless remake of Psycho as the gold standard of adapt and remake for the 1990s. Like,
I will one-up you, because I remember seeing this in theaters. The remake of Lord of the Flies, which has an Alf reference in it.
Nice, nice.
Piggy goes, nice. It's Monday night. Alf's on right now. And I just went, what?
This one should count more, but no one saw it. Stephen King, after being extremely butthurt over Stanley Kubrick's adaptation of The Shining,
yes,
which
this.
Took Jack's character, which is based off of Stephen King, and turned him into a murderous psycho, which Stephen King thought was very rude, decided that he was going to retake The Shining and make a television series. Originally tried to make a movie. The movie didn't work out, so instead all he was able to get was a TV series remake of The Shining that nobody asked for.
I remember watching it. It wasn't too bad. Steven, the guy from Wings, played the author in that. But let's go to
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. Anyways, Val Kilmer. Interesting career, interesting trajectory. It's for as successful as he was, it feels like he should have been able to do more with this moment.
Yes. And that to me is what it is you have, you know, you kind of have a little bit of a dip and then you get really, really hot and you have banger and banger and then you make some bad decisions and then you just decide. And then that's where you have to decide, okay, can I remake myself? Can I go to like Broadway? And he went to Broadway. He did like a Mark Twain show or something like that. And then revisit myself. Or do I just kind of coast and wallow in a little bit of self-pity and succumb to drugs and alcohol, and it's like, okay.
And do I decide that I'm too big for the work? Yeah. I mean, like that gets a lot of people in trouble, especially if you start off with some early success. You get some early success and then all of a sudden you're having a setback and it's like, well, yeah, you're gonna have to go back to the workshop, and you decide, oh, I'm too big for that.
So instead of Vader Club, we did Val Kilmer talk. That's good enough. We'll go into the wrestling news now. Time changes abounding in the two major feds. NXT Stand and Deliver is now slated to start at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time with the main show at 10 a.m. This would be the second move of time, as it was originally noon and then moved to 11 a.m. WrestleMania is listed to start at 3:30 p.m. with the main show at 4 p.m. Pacific time and 7 p.m. Eastern. Let's put it this way, kids. You're going to be hungover on Saturday trying to stumble into Stand and Deliver and be watching wrestling all day because you go to, what, T-Mobile or whatever it is, and then have to walk down to Allegiant Stadium. God help us, that's a day. That show may not get half its audience because it's Vegas. People are going to be drunk.
Yeah, I mean, the only good thing there is that, like, it's Vegas, so I guess the commute's fairly easy. Yeah, you're just going up and down that strip.
Most people walk the strip from the hotels to Allegiant Stadium because the traffic would be such a bear. Although with the prices of Vegas drinks, maybe people won't be. Maybe broke-ass wrestling fans won't be that drunk.
Yeah, right. But, you have one before you start walking, and then you have another one right before you go in.
AEW, on the other hand, their move to counter WWE and NBC, putting Saturday night's main event head-to-head with All In Texas, is to move the show to 3 p.m. Eastern as a start time, 2 p.m. locally. I also think that happens to be because All In's main crowd is still London, even though they're not in London this year. So people in England can actually watch that show at a decent hour in prime time. I think that's a very underrated aspect of them moving this thing. But this happened to me as a kid. It was Starrcade and Survivor Series on the same day, and mine was like one of two cable systems that would run both because Vince scared off all the Crockett people. So your start time for Starrcade was like 3 p.m., and then Survivor Series was like at like 7 or something like that. I'm not sure I'm right on the pay-per-view names, but there was a Crockett WWE doubleheader, and they actually offered it for like one low price on my cable system. So that'll be AEW is being smart here, I think, in terms of their audience and whatnot.
Yeah.
I know, there's nothing strongly to have.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like there's no right. I have no real hot take on
I
that.
I'm just throw these headlines out. If something tickles your fancy, please let
no,
me know.
No. Fair enough. Yeah. But yes, I can't. No, I shouldn't be. Actually, no. I should live up to
anger for later.
No, I want to live up to my fans' expectations once again. Jeffrey, AEW has made a mouth-breathing 0 out of 10 decision. They will all live in a dumpster filled with shit alongside their fans and anyone who has ever liked them, and also their cousins.
In a filing on March 28, Janelle Grant's legal team asked the court to let discovery and depositions begin in her lawsuit against WWE. But of course, WWE, McMahon, and Laurinaitis are opposing because there hasn't been a ruling yet on whether or not discovery would be needed because they haven't decided whether the case should be moved to arbitration. Judge Sarah F. Russell will likely have to decide whether the case will go forward. If and when she makes that call, that would decide when and if discovery would start. This is Dave Meltzer talking in The Observer. The basic point here is that on the Grant side, they want stuff now to add to their evidence in arguing the case should continue in court. And on the other side, obviously, they don't want discovery unless necessary if the case moves forward. I'm going to make this addendum here. I think Grant's side just wants to leak stuff in the public domain in case they lose this case, because I think it's semi-weak, but that's my own interpretation of this. And in discovery, it's like, oh, look, we have this. Oh, and it's going to become public record. And, oh, now the judge is going to say it goes to arbitration, but the damage has been done, kind of a thing. That's for me. But Grant's lawyers are asking for documents that, quote, unquote, may include any subsidiary and or current or former executives, employees, contractors, agents, and or similarly situated personnel of WWE, TKO, and or Endeavor Group Holdings. I don't think they'll be able to get those records from TKO and or Endeavor because this was before the merger. So I think that would also get struck down possibly. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it remains an up. The facts of the case very much remain on Grant and her attorney's side regarding what Vince McMahon did and what Brock Lesnar did allegedly, et cetera, in the deposition. Problem has always been getting it out of arbitration and freeing it up so that it can actually go to some sort of criminal thing. And that seems to be a hurdle that Grant's attorney does, to your point, does not seem to have a great strategy on, hence she is talking a lot. Yeah, that is my read on this.
I just want to make a minor correction on something you said. There's going to be nothing criminal here, I don't think. Basically, what they're doing is they're deciding Well, criminal in the sense of there's going to be no criminal charges.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're basically deciding did he do sexual assault or not blackmail, but like.
But it's weird. So it's like they're deciding, did he do sexual assault? But they're not deciding it in a criminal sense. They're deciding it for the purposes of resolving a contract dispute. Yes. I know a phrase that has gotten us in trouble before, but this has been always the problem with me, and take this up with the justice system, people. It's not me. If it was up to Judge Nove, of course he's going to criminal court for sexual assault.
Yes.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? It's not my choice. But this continues to be the problem for Janelle Grant and her team.
I would agree with that. I mean, we're still discussing contract law in many, many ways. And she's fighting a fight in the court of public opinion. And I think she's winning more or less. I just think she's talking a lot. And that to me gives me a little bit of pause. That's all.
No, it suggests to me a potential an indication of weakness. If you're asking who's stronger, the person who's chattering a lot or the person who isn't saying a lot, having been in both scenarios in different disputes with people in my life, I've always been in the driver's seat when I'm the one who's just sitting there and going, still saying shit,
counterpunching. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Like you're not even saying stuff right now that I feel the need to say anything about.
WWE is opening up a new category for its Hall of Fame, WWE Immortal Moment, which in theory can cover great matches or in specific moments or angles. The first induction in this category, announced on March 28th, was a Steve Austin versus Bret Hart submission match with Ken Shamrock as referee from the 1997 WrestleMania. This to me is brilliant marketing. Because if you have kind of a lackluster Hall of Fame case, hey, Triple H, HBK, or The Undertaker is probably going to be on this show, or The Rock, about one of their great, let's just self-fellatio ourselves about the Attitude Era over and over and over again ad nauseum.
What would you like to see go in? While you're thinking about that, I'll give you my answer. I'd love to see the DX Nation of Domination parody go into the
Well, I mean, my moment's obviously WLC match. have the commentators who did terrible impressions of JBL the King and Jim Ross come out.
Well, no, I mean, I think this should
El Torito.
Jeff, you're being silly. This should be reserved for people we consider to be Hall of Fame level talents. I'll give you another good one. Triple H going in this year into the Hall of Fame and against a legendary opponent from another company, a guy who was a face of the company, guy Booker T.
This Hall of Fame's invalid until D'Lo Brown's in. That's my
D'Lo Brown and draws it.
Oh God, no, dude. Look, D'Lo Brown, every chance he gets says that was the worst moment of my career.
I feel for the man too, and draws. I know he feels awful about that.
I would run through a wall for D'Lo Brown. That dude protected me when nobody else would protect me at times. So I'm Smoky Mountain type stuff. But speaking of Bret Hart, here's where I'm going to cut a promo on him. Bret Hart was on Ariel Helwani's show, and on the current state of WWE and AEW, I find in a lot of wrestlers, and I won't... Originally, this was on AEW wrestlers, not just WWE, so Dave may have added something here, but here's the quote. I find in a lot of wrestlers, and I won't necessarily name anybody, but I find that the wrestlers are more actors pretending to be wrestlers today than actual wrestlers. I miss the ruggedness of the characters. I think that's why I think the 90s was the best era of wrestling. I find that today's wrestling, it's a little bit more about promos and your character on TV and not so much your work rate. I like guys that throw back a little more to the work rate. Roman Reigns is a guy that I think tries really hard to earn the respects of my generation. AEW, I find that they're mostly actors trying to pretend to be wrestlers. Get on with the real wrestling and quit acting so much. Now, there is a lot to digest in this. And I would like to go first if you do not mind.
Yeah, no, my brain kind of hurts. Like, Brett threw down a lot of rail here, and it takes us to an interesting place.
Number one, if you're going to say this about AEW, you need to name names, Brett. You can't be a coward and do this crap. But also, I am sick of Bret Hart. Bret Hart only likes Bret Hart, occasionally Owen Hart, and Steve Austin when he was fighting Bret Hart. Those are the only wrestlers Bret Hart likes. Ric Flair, he was too repetitive. Triple H, we know how he felt about him. He occasionally likes CM Punk because CM Punk hated Triple H and Shawn Michaels. That's it. But here's the quote itself. Okay, he thinks that promos and character on TV is a problem in AEW? All right.
They talk too much on AEW.
Yeah, as opposed to work rate? No, I will defend AEW in this thing. I think he's right on the ruggedness. But then he goes into the 90s were the best decade. Let's take a look at the 90s. You had the new generation.
Yeah, I was going to say, what year? What year are you talking about?
The Damian Demento years of WWF? Those horrible
Repo
Raws?
Man? Are we talking about Repo yeah. Man and Duke the Dumpster Drosy?
Right.
And then
you get into the Attitude Era where it's just, you know, it's you have some good things in the Attitude Era, but you have a lot of drag.
Brett, no. Brett does not get to go back and claim the Attitude Era as this great era of wrestling television. And here is why. Because he hated the
yes.
way that wrestling was being presented at that point, claiming that it had moved away from actual work and moved a lot more into sexual innuendo and other things that he didn't think were wholesome and that he didn't care for. And I actually don't I don't disagree. Like, Big Titty Sable didn't do anything for me either. Like, that, you know, like, I don't think that helps. So, like, I get where he's coming from on this, but he doesn't get to go back and claim, like, you know, it was the good stuff, Sable. No, you hated Sable. You liked Sonny, but you hated Sable.
Trish barking like a dog was a real. Yeah, I'm just, and also, let's just throw back to when we did the Bret Hart Wrestling with Shadows documentary, and he opens with, you know, if I wasn't a wrestler, I think I could have been an actor in the movies. And we're just standing and going, wait, Bret Hart as judgment of acting in any forum needs to be laughed out of a room. Because every time you talk about old Bret Hart's promos and characters, it's always with the rejoinder, well, Bret Hart had a certain kind of intensity and charisma. That wasn't traditional. And you're just like, dude, he was a crap promo. He was a good promo for Bret Hart.
I'm a more of a defender of, like, late era Bret, especially as, you know, like 96, 97, 98. He got better and better with promo.
He got better.
Yeah, he got better and better. But, like, especially in the 90s, like the early 90s when he's feuding with Michaels, his promos all suck then. Like the 92, 93, 94 stuff, it's all shit. He doesn't become a good promo until basically the U.S. Canada stuff.
Who are you to doubt El Dandy? That's his best promo.
Yeah. and that's a good promo.
Yeah.
He's fun. Yeah, he's funny.
He has that Lance Storm charisma where he just breaks out the deadpan comedy, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Personnel moves. Mina Shirakawa has finished up with Stardom. She's going to be heading to AEW full time. Put the Trios Championships on her. Miro.
Just her.
Miro has re-signed with WWE, and Rey Fénix is premiering on SmackDown tonight. That should be interesting. I guess post-WrestleMania is when we're going to put the Lucha Brothers back together. But we have to finish up this thing with Braun Breaker and others within the multi-person match. A lot of multi-person matches in WrestleMania. We'll get to that in the Lazy River.
Yeah.
Injuries. Orange Cassidy, torn pec. Jay White, broken wrist that he suffered against Kevin Knight. Mark Davis, broken foot that he suffered in the match against Will Hobbs. They'll all be on the shelf for a while. WWE, Kevin Owens reported today that his Mania match may be in danger with an injury as well. Who do they get to replace Kevin Owens? Because I was thinking Miro, Aleister Black, or Malakai Black, or Aleister Black, or whatever the hell they're going to call him in there. My fear is that Triple H is going to say, hey, Brock, for a one-shot, would you like to come back against Orton? I don't know if they do that with the court case, but...
Yeah, I don't think they do that. It'll be an interesting move. Bring up Obafemi to have a match against Orton.
Oof. I would not do that. Only because if Obafemi messes something up, Orton's going to clown him in front of a full house. Kind of a thing. Kind of like the Kofi thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but he regrets the Kofi thing.
I guess.
I think he's older, wiser. I think he's older, wiser on that.
Yeah, I think this still might be an angle. I don't know that for a fact. I mean, I've been told it's true. But I think if Kevin Owens can at least walk and brawl, they're going to have a match of some way. Kevin Owens isn't going to miss Mania for the world.
No, I don't think he... I mean, it's a big payday. I don't think he would if he doesn't have to.
That's the news. Let's go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism whenever we had time to watch this week. We'll preview AEW Dynasty because we always do previews first. But overall, for main event angles on television... I thought Raw did a good job with Cena and Cody. It's not great, but they did a good job of putting at least a little bit of heat on it. I thought the Jay Gunther one with the handcuffs and bleeding all over the place was a decent heat angle.
Yes.
I thought Swerve and Hangman was a great moment, but... doing it on the over one was absolutely BS. And you needed to just have that be the last moment of a 2-hour show. And it would have been awesome. And we'd be talking about it for years. But instead, it's on this overrun. And then you get the beatdown with Moxley and the jock writers doing just basically saying, hey, we're going to have a hardcore match on Sunday. And then over on NXT, I thought the Obafemi trick, Javon, trifecta in the middle of the ring had some nice sting to it, especially saying how he's basically Carmelo Hayes now. And I thought the Ricky Saints coronation was done really, really well in terms of ending the show on a high note and quote unquote making somebody. But you kind of had different thoughts about that.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought NXT kind of, I mean, minus the Saints finish, I thought this show was a soul crusher for me. I think the opening here with Stephanie Vaquer and Ava was just absolute heat death to begin your show. A thing nobody really was clamoring for, a thing that narratively was not earned or established, a thing that feels very much like they just looked at the calendar and they're like, oh shit, you know, WrestleMania is coming up. Stephanie's going to have two matches. Like, rather than actually thinking about a narrative wherein her being double champion is somehow prohibitive or whatever. This is essentially a bit of a world shattering segment. Not like it shattered Stephanie Vaquer's emotional world. I mean, like, as in, like, the Deus Ex Machia is not here. Like, why do we need to do this?
Okay, so, pause right there. Pause right there for a moment. Screw the preview. We're just going to go into Lazy River thing, and we'll get to the preview in a second. I agree. I think they just should have said if Stephanie wins the title, she relinquishes the NXT North American title, as opposed to, oh, it's title unification. She'll be able to carry both, because it's just like, well, then why did we book it as a title right. versus title match?
And why do we book it as a title versus title match? Why do we book her into being double champion? What is the point of her being double champion? And when you just strip the belt from a double champion like this, you really neuter whatever equity was put onto the double champion. It's just the Lord taketh away. It's you know what I mean? Like, there's not even a glory moment there, a glory and defeat moment. It's just a well, you know, I'm going to hand this in sort of thing. I it was Ava continues to be one of my least favorite characters in either company that they've come up with in an extraordinarily long time. And that's really saying something because she's just supposed to be a freaking GM. Like, she is not supposed to be someone I'm having huge thoughts about. But time and again, her character is unintentionally annoying. And then the doting praise, like, on commentary by people like Graves and Vic, where it's like, oh, our general manager Ava's just made another great decision. Like, and the crowd's not even with you on this.
Well, what they need is the moment that they can't do, which is someone like Ethan Page to go, if you weren't The Rock's kid, nobody this inept would ever be kept as NXT general manager.
I mean,
lay it out there.
What they need to be doing is heel turning her, and they're not. Like, I would be actually fine with a lot of these decisions in the last like 3 to 4 months here if they were all in service into Ava getting a power trip. Like, not that I need the storyline to go through the general manager. You know, I've never been a massive advocate of that, but at least then that squares the circle on some of these perplexing, overbearing decisions that Ava makes. Instead,
oh, Chris, I think you're getting it though. That's the thing. I'm cutting you off to say, did you make it through the end of NXT?
No. I mean, I got to the same.
Okay, Actually, no. After the three-way with Javon, Obafemi, and Trick, Dark State comes out. They attack everybody involved, and Ava's smiling. So you may get your, let's see if Ava can now play a heel authority figure.
No, I missed the Ava shot. Because I saw Dark State beat up everybody. I missed the Ava shot. Good Lord, this is the worst case scenario. She's the leader of that faction. Like, that
I hope
makes
not. I hope
no
not.
God, I hope not. I'm with you. They might be going there, but like, she should not be if she's a heel. She should just be a heel who's, you know, on a power trip and Dark State are like a means to an end. She should not be the factional leader of Dark State.
But more to your meta point, it was a bad week for NXT women other than Jada Parker.
Yes.
This is all the complaints of the Attitude Era / Vince booking that we had. Look, I am not a great writer of women. That's a very big weakness in why I couldn't eventually continue being a writer, and I'll admit that. But the secret to writing good female characters a lot of times is to just write them as characters. And instead, we're getting the stupid all women hate each other, you know, Bechdel test failing, the stuff about boys, you know, it's the walking and talking of Jordynne Grace was terrible this and clunky, you know, the every locker room shot of the women is just, we're just waiting for the stupid cat fight to begin with all these gaudy over the top characters like Santino's daughter, who I like and is a funny flake, but does not need to be front and center with Lola Vice, who is already kind of clownish too, even though she's a badass in real life. It's like, it's like they want.
No, these characters feel like the early 1990s WWF tropes almost, like these women are like the Repo Men, Duke the Dumpster Drosies, like, you know, Lola Vice. Well, she's an MMA fighter, but she likes to do
the
sexy
dance.
Dancing.
Yes.
Lash Legend. She, you know, she's fabulous. You know, Jada Parker.
Carmen Petrovic.
Sassy. Carmen Petrovic. She's got a sword
and
a douchey boyfriend.
Yes. It's just like they're accessorizing
and
all these women.
What's the fitness motivational one? What's her name? Tegan Bleegan or whatever her name is? Brinley Reese.
Okay,
yeah, a totally normal name. Brinley Reese. Yeah, very, very normal. She's
Sol
a fitness
Ruka.
model. She's a fit. She's a surfer, and she likes to have a good time. Like
just
these characters
have fun.
I think like Red Letter Media had this criticism, and I think it's a little overblown, of like the Star Wars universe in the prequels, where
yes.
basically you could not define these people outside of their jobs and what they look like. And I kind of sometimes feel like that is also a problem here with a lot of this NXT characterization, is and right down to Stephanie, who very much has star power, but right now she just dresses like a succubus and she has really good matches that Booker T drools over.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Oh, Booker. I can't with him and Stephanie Vaquere. I'm sorry. We talked about this last week.
No, we did. I know. But it's this huge. I mean, right out of Toxic Attraction, they're just, I mean, really, with those three, they're not even a Fatal Influence. They're just watered down Toxic Attraction. It is the same unit.
Booker had some interesting words for Swerve going on Vlad's show and whatnot. I'm wondering if that's going to blow. I didn't put on the rundown because it's not yet news, but Booker got a little bit riled up by things that Swerve said about him on a big time podcast type thing. So we'll see if that moves anywhere. Where do we want to go? I don't know. I mean, main roster. What did you think of the Punk Roman Seth segment from Friday? Did we go over that at all?
Yeah, we did. We did last time. I thought Punk really elevated that, and Seth,
okay, you're okay.
Right, his character, the whiny, like he doesn't deserve to be in.
Right? Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to note something. What's the prize for the Royal Rumble, Chris?
To get a title shot?
No, it's to main event WrestleMania.
I'm not even sure anymore. I thought it was to get the title shot.
Neither. Well, yeah, you can call it your title shot for a main event at WrestleMania. Neither Jey Uso nor Charlotte are going to be main eventing either night of WrestleMania. Okay.
The Rumble, I mean, essentially what they have done with this re-envisioning of the Rumble reward is it doesn't mean what it used to anymore.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's one of these things where main event Jey Uso still remains somewhat aspirational, right? Like,
right.
Having Jey Uso win the Royal Rumble didn't move Jey Uso up. It moved the Royal Rumble down.
Yeah, because he's still doing the same character he was doing prior to the Royal Rumble. He's still the underdog against Gunther. Even though he beat 39 other men in a match, he is still, I don't know if I can beat him. Gunther keeps tricking me, and he punked out my brother again.
Yeah, I will say, as well executed, minus the blocking of when Jay was trying to reach for Jimmy and had to like cramp his body to not
short
be
arm.
Able to. Yeah. Am I bleeding, bro? Oh, Jeff, I don't want you to die.
I'm a T-Rex. My arms have all attached. No.
I love you so much, brother, but I cannot move.
Yeah.
Minus that. I thought the execution of the segment was good,
yeah.
But my issue is that they have gone to the Apollo Creed Rocky Four-well too often in builds recently, and we needed to do something else. I I might have even had Jimmy, like, basically, like, he loses the match, but, like, by incapacitating himself. Like, he gets he, like, goes so hard to take out Gunther, and he hurts Gunther, but he ends up really wrecking himself or something like that. Just do something a little bit different than the Passion of the Uso angle. Because that one, for me, it just was a little... It was a little weak.
Jimmy Uso is nothing but a plot device in every single major angle he's involved in.
Yes. Yes, he's now turned into Jay's brother.
But he's always been Jay's brother, even in the Bloodline feud and the stories. It's always Passion of the Jay. And Jimmy's just there as kind of a MacGuffin of sorts to you know. We don't know. I mean, he turns heel here and there. And, you know, but it's all about his connection to Jay. He is basically like Jay's, I don't know, super ego in some ways. Not his id and not his ego. He's just there to mirror some choice that Jay Uso eventually has to make.
Right. Yeah. And certainly at this point, it is very fair to say that Jimmy's career is trading off of the equity of Jay's and not the other way around.
I mean, his gimmick was literally no yeet to yeet.
Yes, right. Yeah, there's yeet, no yeets.
He's the Zaymot to Jay's Tomax. If you remember those twins from Cobra and G.I. Joe. I mean, that's
actually, they completed each other's sentences. It's more like he's like he's become the Scorpion to Jay Sub-Zero.
Okay, we'll go with that, too. That's a good one. You want to go into Dynasty Preview and get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
We can do any AEW Dynamite notes here. 10 matches announced so far for Sunday's card, emanating from the, is it Lyakuris Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? I do not know, but it looks like they have about 8,000 going. Starting with Owen Hart Cup Tournament quarterfinal matches. Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe. Why is Mark Briscoe in this tournament? I have no earthly idea other than people like him. He's an ROH staple. This is in Philadelphia. He'll get a nice pop, and then he'll get beat by Kyle Fletcher because he gets beaten all his big matches.
Yeah. Mark Briscoe, to me, if AEW was trying to run a Moneyball organization, we've said it before, I'll say it again, though. Mark Briscoe, after the death of his brother, I would have, once he had gotten back to a place where he was ready to work, I would have pushed this dude to the friggin' moon. I would have made this like the Moneyball run because you're going to have him a nice cheap contract. He's not going to ask for more. So you don't have to worry about that even. The fan endearment's going to be there. And, oh, by the way, he's actually a hell of a wrestler. He can have main event angles. He is an entertaining match. And there's a lot you could do with this guy, especially playing through that story. And instead, they've relegated him to jobber to the stars. Sympathetic, like, Chief Wahoo McDaniel sort of status.
Yeah. Trying to think of another corollary where it's like a guy that has this much goodwill and then just keeps getting beat and beat and beat, but retains the goodwill type of a thing on the mid card from the 80s. Because Coco Beware never had this much goodwill. Maybe Tito Santana post his Intercontinental title run. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because Tito lost a lot after that. But
yeah.
He still seemed to be pretty strong.
We'll think on it. Mercedes Moné versus Julia Hart. Mercedes is in her I can carry anyone to a good match, and I'll take it as a challenge role. Here's a challenge for you.
Yeah.
Not that Julia Hart's bad, but it'll...
Not that Julia Hart's good, though.
No, but she's game.
Yes.
And she's smaller. So it's not going to be something where Mercedes won't be able to, like, lift her up and throw her a little bit, especially if she does her new finisher there. I think this one could over deliver, but I think Mercedes Moné is winning this.
Well, yeah, I think Mercedes wins. They've not really. I would be surprised if Julia Hart wins. They like her, so it wouldn't completely shock me, but they have not really done a whole hell of a lot to build her up.
In your purely for the star rating porn match, also part of the Owen Hart Cup, Will Ospreay taking on Kevin Knight, who takes over for Jay White, who is out. Both of them in a tag team match to open up, or in a tag team match on Dynamite, where the guy who came out with the most shine was Blake Christian, the guy who lost against Kenny Omega last week. Okay. This is going to be pure spectacle, and Will Ospreay is going to win it.
Ospreay, yeah.
But this is going to be, this is going to get some time, and people are going to ooh and ah about some of the great aerial stuff that's being done in this match. I'm just warning you all, that's what's going to happen. In an intriguing match for me, because I think there might be an angle coming out of this one. The Hurt Syndicate of Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, your tag team champions, taking on the Learning Tree of Big Bill and Brian Keith. I loved the promo that Bill cut. I loved the squash match that Bill and Brian Keith did, up to and including putting in a jobber, not jobber, sorry, enhancement talent with a bad shoulder so that Big Bill could look more brutal by injuring his other shoulder. MJF is somehow involved in this.
Yeah, I think Big Bill and Brian Keith win the tag team titles here.
I was thinking that at first, too. And I actually said they should do that. Because
I think they should, too. I think Brian Keith's not a bad wrestler.
No.
And Big Bill is good. And it's time for these guys to actually get the opportunity to have matches that are meaningful. And inside of the Jericho Vortex, the only chance you're going to get would be something like this.
Yeah, I thought maybe MJF comes out and does one of those, oh, I was trying to help, and then accidentally has them lose so that they need MJF. But the more and more I think about it, Chris, I think we're wrong on this. Even though, because it helps Big Bill more if they lose and they break up the team. Now, my fear is what happens is MJF comes out, interferes, Brian Keith takes the loss. They go back to the Learning Tree, who exacerbates this whole thing that they haven't been carrying their end of the bargain, decides that they need to turn on Brian Keith, but instead Big Bill turns on Jericho. But instead of instead Brian Keith defends Chris Jericho as part of the Learning Tree, which is the same thing that they're doing with Rated FTR and the same thing they're kind of doing with the Patriarchy and the same thing they're doing.
So that makes it
stable.
The most likely story.
Yes.
Tony Khan does nothing but tell the same story four times in three different programs. But I think another move might be that we're missing here, MJF and Jericho reunite.
Huh. See, I think MJF eventually becomes part of this Hurt Syndicate. So I don't know about that, but we'll see. I'd love the Learning Tree to win these things, but I just can't see it. I think the Hurt Syndicate retains.
Okay. I'm not going to fight you.
No. But look, I can be convinced because that's what I originally wanted on Wednesday on that show. And I was like, and as more I thought about it, I went, no. They're going to use this to try and, because right now we're going to have a babyface problem in AEW between Hangman, Swerve, Omega, Will Ospreay, and then they want Big Bill to also be kind of a big time babyface here. That upper echelon is going to be crowded for Big Bill to become a star as a babyface. And what's going to put me to sleep, but other people might like. Singles match for the AEW TNT Championship. This match has no time limit and no outside interference is permitted. As opposed to every other match where apparently outside interference is permitted, but nevertheless. Daniel Garcia versus Adam Cole. Chris, my call on this is that there's definitely going to be outside interference. It's going to be Roderick Strong in some way, and Adam Cole's going to win this and turn heel finally.
Holy shit. Is there the loser is going to be me watching this match. Adam Cole is guilty until proven innocent when it comes to having bad matches from now on. Until someone tells me this guy has a good match, I'm assuming every match he has is going to be mid.
He only has one promo. His matches to me in NXT towards the end, until he had that spark of a feud with McAfee, were kind of the same to me over and over, and they're kind of the same here. You know, the occasional super kicks.
They're less good. He's doing a less good version of the NXT Adam Cole here.
Yeah, you know, fake the Panama Sunrise and then, you know, try and get the boom knee, and it's just and Daniel Garcia, I continue to be baffled by this kid. I like him a lot. He decided he wanted to be where the best wrestle, and that's all he's going to be doing is wrestling. Okay, cool. But he probably should have gone to NXT. That's my opinion.
No joke.
Title versus mask for the Ring of Honor World Championship. The aforementioned Chris Jericho versus Bandido. I don't know how to call this. I think it's possibly a rebrand for Ring of Honor and just putting the title back on Bandido, who used to be the Ring of Honor world title. I don't know. Maybe they're unmasking Bandido in a Rey Mysterio sort of way to make him more marketable. I don't think that would work.
Yeah.
I don't know what the use of taking the title off of Chris Jericho is, since the Ring of Honor world title really doesn't mean all that much and hasn't been featured very heavily on either Ring of Honor or AEW. Who you got here?
I think Jericho retains.
And Bandido has to be unmasked. Does he unmask to show another mask? Is that what that
happens? No, totally, right? Like, that's the kind of, right. Like, yes. I'm going, yes. He does unmask to reveal another mask.
It's a total Chris Jericho segment where he comes out.
That's a total Jericho punchline. That's an absolute Jericho punchline.
Yes, he comes out, he demands the mask, and Bandido takes off the mask, and he's wearing another mask.
Mask, right. Yep, absolutely.
And it's probably his brother's mask. You know, he's the new Gravity or whatever.
Right. Yeah, especially after the Gravity thing. Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be so terrible.
But that's such a Jericho move.
Yeah. For the long forgotten Trios Championship in AEW, your champions, who are the Death Riders, Claudio Castagnoli, Pac, and Wheeler Yuta, taking on rated FTR, Cope, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood. Let me give a shout out to Dax Harwood for just being absolutely fantastic in that segment about the fine. You know, just earnest with not a hint of irony or sarcasm to it in dealing with Paul Turner. I absolutely love the prop of the janky looking check, because I can only assume Tony Khan goes, okay, Dax is going to have a check. Who here has a checkbook? And nobody carries checks. So he has this kind of this piece of paper that looks like it's been in his pocket all day that represents a check with absolutely no graphics on it whatsoever. Here's $10,000. Go buy dinner for your wife. I howled. I loved that there was no hint of wink, wink, nudge, nudge in this segment from him at all. Thought Cash was fine playing the I'm angry and we'll talk about this later, but it's totally turning into Cash and Dax turning on Cope. My hope is that if they do this on the pay-per-view, that if they lose on the pay-per-view, that they don't wait and then do a meeting on Wednesday. I hope they just do the turn on Sunday and beat down Cope. But what do you think?
God, I would love them to just be done with Cope on Sunday, but I feel like this is going to linger. Like the pay-per-view is going to be a loss, but they're not actually going to – there's still going to be a little bit of will he, won't he, and we're not going to get the full break until Dynamite.
Yeah, this feels like something they say for weekly television, which I don't like.
I don't like, but I could absolutely see this being a main event angle on weekly. So
they put on Collision, and then it just ruins everything.
Oh, yeah.
In a three-way match for the AEW International Championship, Kenny Omega versus Ricochet versus Speedball Mike Bailey. I'll give you a little bit of context on this one, Chris. There's a rumor that at All In, it's going to be Kenny Omega versus Okada. But there's a rumor that they're going to combine the International Championship and the Continental Classic titles. I don't know about that for a fact. What do you have in this match? Because I think there's a way they should go, but I don't know if they're going to do it.
I feel like Ricochet wins this one.
I am with you on that. It feels like Ricochet wins this by pinning Speedball so that you don't hurt Kenny.
Kenny. Right. You keep Kenny in the chase, but he actively screws over Kenny big time towards the end of the match, gets the pinfall on Mike Bailey.
And I think Ricochet needs the win in some ways. I do think they need to get rid of some of these titles in AEW, and that'd be a good way to do it. So maybe he wins at Dynasty and then loses like in a big rematch in the build to All In, which would stink, but they do that kind of a thing. I mean, you have two or 3 months, so is it 2 months or 3 months? I don't remember. For a singles match for the AEW Women's World Championship, Timeless Toni Storm versus Megan Bain. Really, let's give a little bit of credit for Collision, which I only watched in bits and pieces, but that shot, they had Toni Storm cutting a promo with the spotlight on her, and they had a tight close-up of her, and all of a sudden, Penelope Ford's boot just comes in from off-screen, and she looks at the spotlight with this big, crap-eating grin on her face. It was a fantastic shot. The match, I thought Penelope Ford looked decent, but nobody thought she was going to win at all. I think they ruined what this match should be, which is Megan Bain murder-deathing Toni Storm in record time to do that, because with the tag team match where they kind of did a weird angle like this to have doubt or whatever, I think Toni Storm has to win this because I think the money is in the Mercedes-Toni match at All In or at another pay-per-view or maybe even All Out where they headline it. I don't know, though. Because Megan Bain's been just an awesome presence on this show. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Bain's been an awesome presence. Right now, you're kind of right. I think that you've got Mercedes and Toni as your two most consistently over talents in the women's division than Bain.
I would even say they're the two best champions in this company.
That I'm not going to disagree with you on that. If anyone 5 years from now says that their favorite title reign of the last 10 years was Jon Moxley's current run in AEW, I'm driving them to the nearest mental facility or drug rehab facility, whichever one's closer, and I'm dropping them off there, and I'm not letting them leave for 3 weeks. I'm just paying for it.
It's very odd because it seems to me the path to All In is Mercedes and Athena. And a lot of people were saying that Athena would derail Mercedes there. But Mercedes and Athena are also both in the Owen. So this feels like Tony's being clever in some way. In that somehow he's going to find a way to give Mercedes a title shot at Toni by winning the Owen, but still lose the TBS title at All In to Athena.
Hell yeah, that's my... he is bringing back Athena. That's right.
Yes. And yeah. Athena has been a major part of marketing All In. She's from Texas.
That's right. Yeah.
She was at the big, we were all kind of like, okay, why is she part of this media scrum thing? And she's in Ring of Honor kind of a thing. But that appears to me that she's going to get the, and I hate to say it this way, the Naomi win in Orlando type of push. Where it's she's from this area. Let's give her the title here and then take it off of her a couple months later. But
we'll see.
But boy, I've really enjoyed watching Megan Bain just beat look like a wrestler to me on professional wrestling. I
like Megan Bain. Penelope Ford for me is sad to see now because I. The magic, the spark or whatever she had's kind of gone.
Yeah, I thought she over-delivered in that match.
No, I know. She's still talented. But, like, there was a point, I mean, there was a point where she had, like, real star power and everything. And, that's gone now. I don't know what's up with that. Yeah.
She's now there to do a quote-unquote good match for 7 or 8 minutes, and it's like, okay.
Great. In a way, you really feel it when someone has a killer theme song, and like, because like Super Bad Girl's a catchy one. Come on, man.
Yeah,
like
that's a great nickname.
It's a great nickname. It's a killer song. And when she comes out in a jobber context, I basically out there to enhance the other person. It's like you hear the killer theme song, and then the next person comes out and they have a non-remarkable theme song, and it really sticks out.
Yeah, it's odd. She's not here yet because I still think they want to push her, but it's just crowded right now. I feel the same way about Jamie Hayter. I love her theme song.
That thing's
a banger.
Yep.
And it's just like, and she's coming out and she's doing all the stuff and the crowd loves her and there's nowhere for her to go because you have Willow, you have Megan Bain, you have Mercedes, you have Tony, you still have Mariah May around there, but who knows if she's going to WWE or not. You know, it's just there's a glut up at the top right now and it's like it's hard to keep women hot. Chris Statlander still in the mix inexplicably for me, but for others, they really like her.
Chris Statlander is definitely a wrestler who is in this company.
Yes.
I'm not going to deny that. I'm not fighting you on that.
She's very talented. It's just her, it's like they missed the exit on the interstate of the time to go on the off ramp and make her the big deal in the division. And there are people that I talk to that still think, no, she could be the star of this thing. I'm like, no, her.
No.
It's past already. The moment's past, and now we're looking for a story for her because you know I thought it was gonna be when she went with Stoke, and then Stoke would lead her to the title or something like that, but then things happened. Stokely no longer on television, and Chris Statlander no longer a heel and looking to be Willow's friend again, even though she didn't check on her when she got beat down by Moxley. By the way, what do you think of that spot? Because my co-host hated it, but hated it, I thought, for the wrong reasons.
Well, what, he just didn't like a guy attacking a woman? Was that like
yes.
the...
Yes.
I had no... That didn't bother me at all. I think, like, if anything, that's kind of consistent with what the Jon Moxley character is. You know what I mean? So it's like...
Yeah, I think for me, it was, you booked them in a mixed tag match. What did you think was going to happen, Tony Khan, or fans? But see, my part was I didn't like it because Moxley did the whole, oh, I'm backing up and I don't know what I'm going to run into. And then I'm going to he doesn't do the DDTs her immediately because he didn't see who it was. He checked it and saw that was her and then did it, which kind of forgives it. But at the same time, I just hate watching Moxley do the, whoa, I'm on janky legs. I'm a little off kilter and I don't know what I'm doing right now. And oh, look, I just want him to just run in and do it on purpose and then say, screw you, Swerve. You know, that kind of a thing. But that brings us into Jon Moxley versus Swerve Strickland in a singles match for the AEW World Championship.
Oh, God, this is a tough one.
It is because up until a while ago, I thought for sure this is where they coronate Swerve Strickland, and then people remind me, you know, you really want to do that on a much bigger show.
He's already been champion once.
He's already been champion once, so yeah. I think I know how this goes, but I'll let you go into it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say Moxley retains. That this crap continues. This death ride that you and I are on, Jeffrey, it will continue.
There are thoughts that the wild card in the Owen is going to be Swerve Strickland after he loses this match, which would then put Hangman versus Swerve in the first round. I can't quite get there. I thought for certain that when they booked Jon Moxley versus Swerve Strickland, it was going to be the re-coronation of Swerve Strickland. We're going to finally make this guy the guy, because I am in the minority in that I thought Swerve Strickland's first title run wasn't all that great, because they kept on having, because number one, the Hangman presence in his title run and the mixed heel babyface dynamics of the two absolutely screwed his run. They couldn't decide whether or not Swerve was a babyface or heel. They couldn't decide whether or not he was a historical champion or still had to maintain some of that swagger from the Mogul Embassy type of Swerve Strickland. But here's how I think it's going to go down. I think Swerve's going to lose to Moxley, but I think Hangman's going to be the one to come out and get rid of the rest of the Death Riders so that it's one-on-one, but that Moxley still finds a way to win this. And then at All In, Hangman's going to win the Owen. He's going to go up against Moxley. He's going to win it, but he's going to win it with Swerve's help in eliminating the Death Riders when the Death Riders try to interfere on that thing. And then they're going to have a big hug and all is forgiven, and then Swerve's going to challenge him for the title. That's what I think's going to happen. Something to that effect. I could see Swerve winning this and then it being Hangman and Swerve for the title, but this time as gentlemen, uneasy allies, shaking hands and letting bygones be bygones. It's so weird to me that they did that moment on the overrun and then did a beatdown. This is going to be a hardcore match because that's what they were basically telegraphing here. I still think Swerve needs to be the next champion of this company though, Chris. I'm trying to figure out a way in my brain to get Swerve.
I think Ospreay does, but like that, but I also, I guess, still live in this past where we signed Will Ospreay alongside Okada last year, and it was a really big deal that was going to change this company, and he was the future face of the company. And so I guess I don't know what the story is anymore, is my point.
We have Ospreay, we have Hangman, we have Swerve. Two of those three have been champions already. And we have Kenny, if you want to throw him in the mix. Kenny, Swerve, and Hangman all had, to me, mediocre title runs. Just going to say it. I didn't think they didn't build good feuds for them. They didn't stick around all that long. Kenny was trying to play what he thought was a heel, and it wasn't a strong run. Whereas we kind of wanted the Heenan and Bockwinkel run with him and Don Callis, and we never really got it. Hangman kind of just moved into emo stuff. He had like a minor feud with the Murder Hawk Monster, and then it just got into this whole thing with Joe. And Joe Hangman and Swerve, and then Hangman and Swerve started being jerks to one another. There's a lot of movement for Swerve to be the next champion because he was the first black champion and he wasn't a quote unquote, he wasn't the guy, and people now want him to be the guy and the champion at the same time. I don't know. I think Will Ospreay would be good, but his promos stink of late. They're hokey. They're trying to be John Cena-esque in terms of the, I'm going to tell dad jokes to the fans and you're going to laugh at me. I don't know who you put the title on after Moxley, especially because Moxley's story has never really had a clear ending to it. That's the other problem here is...
Right. I mean, this is the problem with the Death Riders, is that this story has lost the thread. What are we doing with this faction? What is this faction's point? Why do they do things from week to week?
Like, who is the guy to look at Moxley and go, no, the kids are all right. We're all right. We are AEW. We're the best wrestle. And you're wrong. Right. We're not
theoretically right. Shouldn't that be FTR and Cope, who basically are veterans who sit there and go, you know what? I'm honored to lock horns with some of these young guys. It is an amazing honor to finish out my career wrestling talent that's at as high a level as it was when I first came into wrestling.
It should be Darby Allin. It should be Darby Allin comes in and beats Moxley, but he's about to go climb a mountain on April 15th, and we don't know if I didn't put that in the story, but yes, he starts his Everest expedition on April 15th.
Oh, good for him.
And who knows if he's going to make it back. Not an experienced mountain climber by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm sure he's been in training. But he is the guy that you look at, but he also doesn't look like...
You cannot train for 27,000 feet! That thing killed white people like nobody's business.
I'm gonna name it Nat Turner.
It's an honorary member of the Black Panthers.
Kills white people. But that's the other thing is, yeah, how can you make a guy, look, and this gets a little Coronetti in a way, but how do you make a guy that looks like Darby Allin, the face of your company, as the main world champion wrestler? It's just, there's so many things that are just, I have no idea where to go with this. I think Will Ospreay is the correct answer.
He's the only answer, but yeah, I don't know what they're... I don't know what the point of the Death Riders story is, right down to the Chekhov's gun of the briefcase. That's the crazy thing, right? Like, you created this Chekhov's gun. I don't even know what it's foreshadowing. Like, there's no, you know what I mean? There's no sort of Damocles to this briefcase.
There is, but it's dumb. And I think it also
sort
ties
of Damocles.
Yeah, sort of Damocles. But it's like the John Cena story. It's you want to see the AEW championship, but I'm going to take it away from you. That's what it is. He's cool. Basically saying the title's just a trinket. And the champion is the guy who, you know, that old Game of Thrones line. If you have to tell people you're the king, you're not the king.
Right.
It's Moxley saying, I'm the champion. And I don't need the belt to tell you that. But they haven't told that story very well either.
No. And I mean, I think sort of that is like, it would be like, I'm so dominant that I don't need to show you the belt. You're looking at the champion.
I'm going 70-30 that Moxley retains. But I could see a situation where Swerve wins this. But it's a B pay-per-view, and I wouldn't do it on a B pay-per-view, but that's just me. Let's end it there.
Yeah.
How about that? Because I have a heart out in 2 minutes.
Okay.
So this has been Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show about 20 minutes after they go off the air. Paul Fontaine and I go live to thoroughly break down that week's show. We also did we did something called the Rewatchables. We did the first AEW Double or Nothing. A lot of stories that Garrett Gonzalez had talking to Dave Meltzer about the formation. A couple stories I had about the formation of AEW and my minor, minuscule involvement in helping them traverse the visas and whatnot and immigration work. But that's in your podcast feeds now. Chris has plugs as well. He's going to give them to you.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a summer course that I will be announcing for music lessons for those inclined. We'll starting in June here. It's going to be on, it's entitled Human Songwriting. It'll be going 3 weeks in June here. If you are interested, please hit me up on Instagram. In advance of that, of course, I've been doing research on songwriting. This is actually specifically about AI and songwriting in an era of AI. My research led me to an interesting discovery here. If you are so inclined, I will spare you the longer version of this because of Jeff's hard out. But Google Suno, S-U-N-O, my name, Chris Novembrino, and Remi, R-E-M-I. And you will see some of the things that I've been busy behind the scenes here this week doing. Do that. If you're interested in guitar lessons, hit me up. Follow me on Spotify. Instagram is DOCTOR_NOV. And remember, take your vitamins and eat your Wheaties.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture. And we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.